My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. We hope you'll stay tuned. And I am very, very pleased to have with us Professor David Kotz, who is a professor at the Department of Economics, the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. Professor Kotz, thank you for being with us on the program today.
Glad to be here, Mike.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us to talk about the involvement of Russian forces in Kosovo, and also perhaps we can broaden the situation to what's happening in Russia in general. And I asked Professor Kotz, I said, can you send me a little bio? And he sent me the short version of his bio, and suffice it to say that among the many books and articles that you've written, we can just name just a couple: Revolution from Above, The Demise of the Soviet System, Lessons from Economic Transition in Russia and China, Neoliberal Economic Policy, State Desertion, and the Russian Health Crisis, among many, many others. Professor Kotz is a man who knows of which he speaks when it comes to the issues and situations in Russia. Professor Kotz, thank you for being with us. Can we begin by talking about Russian involvement in Kosovo and what that means, and then perhaps we can broaden the discussion as we go along this afternoon?
Okay, sure. Russia has, in many ways, played a role different from what you, the impression you'd get from the media. You get the impression that Russia sort of beat their way into being involved in this Kosovo business. But in fact, the United States and NATO called Russia in to save a policy that was not working very well. If you'll recall, it had been expected that a few days of bombing would be enough to cause Slobodan Milosevic and the Yugoslav officials to give in to NATO's demands. President Clinton stated this just the other day. And of course, that's not what happened. And as the bombing became more and more destructive in Kosovo and Serbia, the NATO countries were looking for a way to end this. And Russia emerged as the intermediary that they called in somewhat in desperation to find a way to end this increasingly difficult involvement.
Well, certainly that appeared to be the case. I know there was a tremendous amount of shuttle diplomacy, if we could use that term, whereby Russian negotiators were going and trying to help broker some kind of deal to end the bombing and end the killing.
That's right. And, the impression that you get from things that some American officials say is that the West was sort of doing a favor to Russia to make it look like they were still an important power in the world, but that really is not what happened. Russia's historical relation to the Serbs became crucial in brokering a way out of this very difficult military involvement. And basically, the NATO powers had no choice but to allow Russia a significant role because of the need they had for Russia's intercession. So no one should have been surprised when Russia took advantage of its important role in this, in halting the bombing and negotiating a ceasefire. Russia took advantage of it to be the first country to march into Kosovo.
We're talking with Professor David Kotz, and we're talking about Russia and Russian involvement in Kosovo. Professor Kotz, can we talk about what the situation regarding Russia in Kosovo is at this moment, to the best of your knowledge?
Well, after a long and tense negotiation, an agreement has been worked out, interestingly, not between Russia and NATO, not between Russia and the UN, but between Russia and the United States. That's who worked out the agreement, as to just what role Russia will play now in the peacekeeping force. An interesting thing about the way this bombing campaign ended is that it was ended by a UN Security Council resolution, and that resolution in the body of it did not actually mention NATO. NATO was mentioned only in footnotes, in an annex, and that stated that there will be, quote, substantial NATO participation. And it did mention unified command and control in the peacekeeping force, but it didn't say who would have that control. And Russia took advantage of this wording to say that they had as much right as any other country to participate in the peacekeeping force. Russia wanted their own geographic sector in Kosovo. What was worked out was a compromise in which Russia will operate within several of the sectors headed by either the United States or one of the European powers, and Russia will have a significant autonomy within those sectors, although they will at the same time have some kind of unified command. How they're going to pull that off is not completely clear.
Well, I was going to ask you that because I thought, and once again, you know, from my limited knowledge of the topic, but that, you know, I mean, that Russian troops being under NATO command was not going to be something that the Russians were going to go for. But apparently there's some sort of deal being worked out here where they're sort of under command, but not really under the command. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, it's a very strange wording. They both are and they aren't. And the Russians can say that they aren't, that their troops ultimately answer to their own top military leadership in Moscow. But the agreement said the same is technically true of the United States, Britain, France, Italy, and Germany. So there both is NATO coordination, and at the same time, each nation does claim that it's ultimately answerable, its troops are answerable to their own military. I think this is not likely to be as big a problem as some observers are making out, because I think the differences concerning how to conduct peacekeeping operations, at least at this stage, are not so great between Russia and the five NATO countries. I think both Russia and the NATO countries want to encourage both the Albanians and the Serbs to live in Kosovo peacefully. And I think all of these countries are going to try to, at this point, to bring about some kind of accommodation, although whether it's possible to do that at this point is open to question.
We're talking with Professor David Kotz, who is joining us to talk about an area of his expertise, which is that of Russia and what's happening regarding Russia in Kosovo. Professor Kotz, let me ask you a question, because I'm thinking as you're speaking that maybe right now everybody has agreed to sort of get along, if you will, but it certainly seems that KLA retribution attacks, if you will, for lack of a better term right now, seem to be escalating in Kosovo. I mean, does there come a point, where the Russian forces are put in a position to make a more aggressive defense of the Serbian population than perhaps some of the other NATO forces might engage in? Does that make sense?
Well, you know, the NATO forces are pledged to prevent retribution. One would hope that they would be just as active in carrying that out as the Russians might. You know, unfortunately, the whole NATO strategy, which centered on this bombing campaign of over 2 months, has made it very difficult to resolve the terrible problems of Kosovo. So much killing occurred, so much destruction and devastation, that the feelings between the Albanians and the Serbs are at such a fever pitch that it would be hard to imagine any peacekeepers, even those with superhuman powers, getting these two sides to live together in peace. And, you know, when you read the accounts, they all say that it was the day that the NATO bombing started that terrible things really began to happen on a large scale. You know, there were UN peacekeepers in Kosovo that were withdrawn just before the NATO bombing, and that was what really unleashed the worst elements in Serb society to attack the Kosovo Albanians. And you add to that all the tremendous destruction done by the NATO bombing, and it's not surprising that the Albanians come back and they want to wreak vengeance. It's not just the KLA, it's ordinary Albanian civilians now that are reportedly trying to kill Serbs and steal their possessions and burn down their homes.
That leads me to ask you this question. In looking at the overall situation and strategy as it has played out prior to the bombing, then the bombing, and now what's developing in the aftermath of the bombing. Could you share your analysis of, you know, what happened and what could have happened, or perhaps what should have happened, and in this whole series of events that has led us up now today to the situation in Kosovo?
Well, that complex question has an answer that depends on what you think the real aims were of the NATO countries. They stated that their main aim was to protect the Kosovo Albanians' human rights, to prevent them from being brutalized, from being expelled. If that was the real aim of this whole policy that was followed by NATO, then it's hard not to conclude that the policy was a failure, because the NATO bombing actually was followed by the massive repression and expulsion of Kosovo Albanians. If the aim was to prevent that from happening, I believe that further use of diplomacy, further use of international pressure was a much more viable avenue for finding a way for the Serbs and the Kosovo Albanians to live together in Kosovo. But if you think that the more important aim from NATO's point of view, and particularly from the United States government's point of view, was to establish NATO as in a new role in the world, instead of being a defensive alliance, which it had always been and which its charter called for, to have it emerge as an aggressive force in the world that would act as a kind of world policeman, that would strike down countries and governments which would not go along with the NATO leaders' solutions to problems, then I think the policy was a success. Enormous, you know, tens of billions of dollars of destruction were done in Yugoslavia as a result of the Yugoslav government's refusal to accept NATO's demands, and it seems to me this was the more important aim in the first place.
Well, I was going to say I agree with you on that. Let me remind the listeners that we're talking with Professor David Kotz, who is with the Department of Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. And Professor Kotz has written a number of books and articles on Russia and activities and issues facing Russia. Professor Kotz, the question comes to my mind that the United States put forth a position that this bombing and intervention was done in the name of human rights. It seems to me that there are any number of other opportunities where the U.S. could have made geopolitical decisions that would have furthered the cause of human rights, have chosen not to do that. I have a hard time believing that, you know, human rights is the real issue here. And I had someone posit the suggestion to me that perhaps a part of the issue here is to further encroach upon Russia and the former Soviet Union by setting up a series of NATO and Muslim-dominated states led by the U.S. and by Turkey, which would then help ensure economic control for the European Union and the United States of oil, and then sort of put more pressure on Russia. Does that make sense to you at all?
Well, some elements of that do, I think. If you look at it from the Russians' point of view, they were very unhappy when the United States pushed for the admission of their former closest allies in Central and Eastern Europe into NATO in the first place. And the United States assured them that since NATO was just a defensive alliance, the Russians had nothing to worry about when the Czech Republic and Poland, Hungary, would join NATO. But then the next thing that happens, right after they join NATO, is the use of NATO military force against one of Russia's oldest and historically closest allies, the Serbs. I think the Russians saw this as a confirmation of their worst fears. It's true that a number of the former republics of the Soviet Union, which have valuable natural resources, Azerbaijan and others, are now separate nations, which the United States and the West European powers are very interested in becoming economically dominant in to get control of their natural resources. And the Russians put this all together, and they fear that that the United States is orchestrating a kind of a military, political, economic noose around them, and they're worried that the next attack will be against them. You know, it's interesting that all during the Soviet period, at least in the last few decades of the Soviet period, although there was a Cold War going on with the United States, the Russian people had a relatively favorable attitude toward the United States. And it is only now that a genuine and deeply felt hostility to the United States has permeated the Russian population. And it is the bombing of Kosovo and Serbia that really crystallized it. A poll taken in April in Russia found that 72% of those polled regarded themselves as, quote, hostile to the United States. Over two-thirds saw NATO as a direct threat to Russian security. And this is a big shift. A few years ago, Russians had a very favorable attitude toward the United States, but it has now really turned around.
This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. We're talking with Professor David Kotz about Russia and situations facing Russia and Russia's involvement in Kosovo. Professor Kotz, can we talk about the situation facing Russia economically and politically? Because, I mean, as I understand it, economically, Russia's in tremendously desperate straits, or at least the common people of Russia are. Can you talk about what's happening inside Russia economically and politically?
Yes, and it is connected with this very strong reaction that the Russian people had to the Yugoslavia war. Russians had expected that when they gave up their old communist-run system and adopted capitalism, that they would experience a big improvement in their living standard. But instead, of course, the reverse has happened. Since the end of 1991, when the big transition occurred, Russia has experienced a 50% drop in its economic output as a whole, and investment in their economy has fallen by over two-thirds. It's been an unmitigated disaster. Over half of their population survives by growing a few vegetables in their backyard, and these are, you know, this is a largely urban population, and they've followed economic policies that were urged on them by Western experts and by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, and they have produced economic disaster unprecedented in the 20th century. Unfortunately, every time a Russian government official has proposed some deviation from this disastrous set of economic policies, they have been warned that they would be cut off by the West if they did this. Can you imagine a country with 50% of its industrial capacity lying idle, and the West demands that they continue to cut public spending to make money and credit ever more scarce and to raise taxes? I mean, this is exactly the opposite to what would be considered sensible economic advice, yet this is what is demanded of Russia.
No, you're speaking about that. I mean, that boggles my mind, in essence, what is being said is, you know, we know you're starving and we know you're dying, and the way out of this is for you to suffer more. And it's no wonder that there's a tremendous amount of resentment in Russia against the people and organizations that they see as perpetrating this misery upon them.
And that's what was really brought to the surface by the bombing of Yugoslavia. The anger was building up over these last 7 years as the economy just was wrecked, and a small number of insiders were, you know, handed the gems of the Soviet economy, and it was crystallized by this bombing campaign.
We're talking with Professor David Kotz about Russia and what's happening inside the country. Professor Kotz, I may have the numbers wrong, but somebody was explaining it to me at one point that, you know, you're talking about 50% of Russia's manufacturing capability laying idle, and they compared that with the depression in the 30s in America, where in America it was something like maybe 10 or 20%, something like that. I mean that when you look at what that happened in the Depression, and then we see that Russia's situation is so much worse, I mean, one I can think can begin to get an idea of just how bad it really is.
That's right. Although, you know, the Great Depression in this country was a bit more severe than the numbers that you cited. The
okay.
Gross national product of the U.S. fell by about 30%
okay.
from 1929 to 1933. And industrial output fell by even more, but Russia's contraction is about—it's more than 50% greater than the Great Depression. So it's still a lot more severe. But I wouldn't underplay the Great Depression of the 1930s. But just imagine—you know—when you think of the profound effects that the Great Depression had on our society, and of course, ending it required a big increase in public involvement in the economy. Now Russia, faced with an even more severe depression, and the West says Herbert Hoover economics is what they should follow, rather than following policies like the Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, they're supposed to cut government spending even further than they've already done, which will of course only make their depression worse.
And now all of the listeners know why Professor David Kotz is the professor of economics and I'm the talk show host. Professor Kotz, what about politically in Russia, the situation now? From my perspective, the media refrains from saying it, but certainly from what I see of President Yeltsin, he certainly appears to be a fairly unstable chronic alcoholic.
That sums it up.
Yeah, I think so. What is the realities of the political situation in Russia from your perspective?
Well, President Yeltsin of Russia has been virtually a dictator these years. He was originally elected president of Russia back when it was part of the Soviet Union, but when the next election rolled around, by that time he had disbanded the Russian parliament with tanks. He and his close cronies had written a new constitution which gives essentially all political power to the presidency, and he bought his re-election in 1996 by spending hundreds of millions of dollars, which was more than 100 times what was permitted under the law. And he is unstable and in bad health. The real problem, I think, is that he has followed policies which have been destroying the Russian economy and society, and creating a real ticking time bomb. You know, it's bad enough what's been happening to the Russian people, and given that there's no reason why this had to happen. But even beyond that, it poses a tremendous danger for the world in general, and for the United States in particular. Russia is a country with many thousands of nuclear weapons, and whose military leadership has been humiliated by the loss of Russia's great power status, and whose people are outraged at the destruction of their country and society. And there is a real danger that at some point a regime will emerge in Russia that will be out for revenge, and this could spell a terrible period in world history.
Are we talking about a regime led by someone like Zhirinovsky?
Well, that would be the worst. Zhirinovsky loves to talk about Russia militarily seizing neighboring states, you know, getting a port on the on the Mediterranean, etc. Warm war, Indian Ocean, a warm water port for Russia. But Zhirinovsky has been somewhat eclipsed in Russian politics. A greater likelihood would be General Lebed, who is still a potential contender for the Russian presidency in the election that is scheduled to take place in June of next year. And General Lebed is a little hard to read, but he does have this appeal as the general on a white horse who many Russians hope could ride into Moscow and solve all their problems by reasserting Russian power and greatness.
We've been speaking with Professor David Kuntz, who's professor at the Department of Economics, University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Professor Kuntz, we just have a couple of minutes left. Is there a final thought that you'd like to share with our audience about, you know, what you think we should be learning from all of what's happening and what we should be paying attention to?
Well, I think hopefully what people can learn is a greater degree of humility about America's ability to remake the world as it sees fit. The attempt to remake Russia after its image has produced a distorted version of capitalism with all of its bad features and none of its good features. The attempt to force a policy on Yugoslavia has produced the opposite of what was intended. I think a more modest approach to the world, working with our allies, working through the United Nations, to do our share to help solve world problems but not try and run the world would lead to more favorable outcomes.
Professor David Kuntz, thank you for joining us to talk about Russia and Russia's involvement in Kosovo. We appreciate you being with us on the program today, and perhaps we can have you on again in the future.
Okay, well, I'd like that. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That's it for this edition of the program. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. If you're interested in copies of this or other Full Logic Reverse programs, you can contact us via email at flr@jps.net or by telephone at area code 530-265-9462. Full Logic Reverse is produced at FLR Studios in Nevada City, California, USA. Our music is by Rick Payne. We hope you'll join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.